We've had our morning discussion and came up with some very interesting ideas. Now we begin Santa's gifts program to me, how I train my genie stem cells. And this is lecture one, what Santa has in store for me. Santa does not exist. Santa is the figment of our imagination. Santa is a jolly fellow that we have created to sort of encourage us to think happy thoughts, to be a happy person, to make children mind and behave, and give them presents or give them coal in their stockings if they don't behave. And Santa is a long-awaited-for individual to bring something good into our life. Well, this is what we have been taught. Santa has been created and recreated and created and recreated to fit every single need that any of us might ever have. And how have you created Santa in your life? Now, many of you come from Europe. You come from Switzerland. You come from Germany. You come from Italy. And you come from America, at least I do. And so our traditions vary. And as our traditions vary, our attitudes about what Santa Claus is varies. And every country wants to bring their own version of Santa into the big picture. Every country wants to bring their own version of Santa into the big picture. Every country wants to bring their own version of Santa into the big picture. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting how every country in the world creates Santa in their own special way, speaking their own language? How about that? Having customs that are uniquely theirs. But what is the universal aspect of Santa that always stands forth? Santa always is giving. Santa is giving from an inexhaustible storehouse of supply. Now, Santa is an irrational, illogical being that does not do things in a normal way. In the first place, here in America, he arrives with six reindeer, and their names have become legend. And he arrives not only with six reindeer, he arrives in the sky. He doesn't go along the road. He's up in the sky. He flies over the moon. And he goes everywhere. My goodness sake. How crazy can you be? Now, Santa does a lot of strange things, perhaps in other countries too. I don't know the legends of all the other countries, but in other countries, in many countries, he comes down the chimney. He comes down the chimney to bring things to boys and girls. He doesn't open the door. Now, why do they have him coming down the chimney? And you all know that the chimney is not big enough for a big old fat guy to come sliding down. I mean, he must be something very, very special. And here this fat guy not only comes down this skinny little pipe chimney, but he brings a big bag of toys along with him. You know, got sleighs and big things. He's like Mary Poppins. She reaches into her suitcase, into her bag, and she brings out a stand for her clothing. She brings out all a number, everything she brings out. Well, now, Santa is the same way. Santa is created to be an unbelievable creature. We have done everything we can to make Santa unbelievable. We tell that he is from the North Pole. I think most people have Santa from the North Pole. They have Santa coming down from the North Pole where it's cold. And yet, Santa has his workshop there to make toys for all the boys and girls all over the world. No. He has orders that he must fulfill. What do the little boys and girls want? So, Santa, if he gets a letter from the boys and girls, he knows. But now, what about all the boys and girls who don't know how to write? And what about all the boys and girls who don't know that you have to write a letter to Santa? Their parents never told them that. Does Santa bring them toys? Oh, yes. Lots of wonderful toys. And another improbability and impossibility for a Santa, yes, is how does he put down 1 billion, 6 billion, 8 billion, who knows how many billions of cups of coffee or cocoa or cookies in one night? I mean, he is amazing, truly. And does anyone ever contest those areas? No. They never say, how can he do it? Oh, they may say in a magical way, how can he do it? Isn't that wonderful? Feeling all the while that he can do it. Now you see, this is what we've been taught. Now, from the time you were a little child, you learned about a Santa Claus. Your own Santa Claus from your own country, from your own experiences. And it was a nice Santa Claus. He's usually a good guy. See, the bad guy who put coal in your stockings and so forth was Santa's helper, not Santa. Santa never did that. Santa never found a bad boy or a bad girl in all the world. And Santa also said, in polite society, there are no bad human beings in all the world. All the human beings are very good. Now, you say, well, if this is true, how can it be? How can it be that a world filled with logical human beings would believe in such an illogical form and teach it to their children? And how, when the older boys and girls realize that for them there's no Santa Claus, it's really mommy and daddy, it's still the same thing, that they don't want to tell their younger brothers and sisters because they don't want to take Santa Claus away from them. Okay? Now, so much for Santa Claus. We could go on with a lot more interesting adventures about Santa Claus. But what about the Easter Bunny? Ever hear about the Easter Bunny? The Easter Bunny brings chocolate eggs to children all over the world. Where does he put them? He doesn't have a stocking to put them in. He just puts them in a basket. He brings an Easter basket to all the boys and girls and their mommies and daddies. And sometimes he likes to play games. And so the Easter Bunny has special Easter hunts where all the children go out and they hunt in the field in the forest looking for eggs that are hiding here and there. And who hid them? The Easter Bunny. Now, come on. It takes a long stretch of the imagination to make yourself believe that. But yet that's what we teach our kids. And that's what we teach ourselves. And that's what we believe. Really. In the cultures of many countries, they have little people. And what are these little people? These little people are elves. They're gremlins. And what do they do? What are they called in Ireland? What are they called in Ireland?
Gnomes.
Gnomes? No, that's in Germany. In Ireland, they have their pot of gold, and they're special people. And they look like gnomes, but they're grisly little people, and they're always short people, maybe 1 or 2 feet tall. And they can do magical things. They can appear and disappear whenever they want. And they have a pot of gold, and they offer you a pot of gold. And if you ever take the pot of gold, you're lost because they own you, because you bought into their existence. Now, you say, well, what's that got to do with Santa Claus? Well, the elves these ones from Ireland, are always giving out their presents, are always giving out their gold. What did Pinocchio do? Pinocchio was a little wooden boy, a doll that his creator had made, and Pinocchio always wanted to be a real boy. And so, who helped him become a real boy? His fairy godmother. She came down, she said, Pinocchio, if you'll be a good boy for so long a period of time, you will be a real live boy in a real live body. And many other stories, Hans Christian Andersen, all these stories, they all go into the belief of wanting to believe. Now, let's take another step. We have a guy who was supposedly born 2,000 years ago. You know what I mean. They call him Jesus, Jesus. And he was an ordinary guy. He was born to a pregnant woman, and he was supposed to be able to do wonderful things because the shepherds told them, and the wise men told them, and the angels told them, and everybody told Joseph and Mary, you know, all about it. Now, interesting thing, isn't it? What happened to Jesus? Well, he walked on water. He raised the dead. That's a lie. He raised the dead. He healed the sick. That's a lie. He did not heal the sick. He did not raise the dead. To every quote-unquote dead person, he said, they only sleep. Arise, my daughter. Arise, my son. Lazarus, arise. To his sisters, he said, he only sleep. You see, and the people didn't believe them. They believed he raised him from the dead, you know. And whenever a healing was done, he did the healing because he was telling them, according to your belief, it's done unto you. See, no. Why do you want to believe in Santa Claus? Why do you want to believe in Santa Claus? You want to believe in Santa Claus because it's a pleasant myth. And it's a comfortable myth. And it's a good myth. And it's a real myth. Okay? So, Santa Claus does not really exist. And yet, Santa Claus does exist. Santa Claus exists everywhere anyone believes in him. And you can believe that. Because anywhere anyone believes in Santa Claus, they bring out whatever is his ethic, whatever is his charisma, his attitude. And why do they say he's a jolly ho, 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 Santa Claus? Because he exists. He is the joy. He is the sparkle. He is the unlimitedness in each one of us. He is that in each one of us which is indefatigable, which never gets tired and never gets old. How many years has Santa been around and they haven't had any replacements? Oh, in the movies they try to make a replacement, you know. They say that he's a replacement for them. And in the movies they try to do these things, but it's not so. You do not replace a concept. And Santa is a concept. And Jesus is a concept. And all miracle things are concepts. Now, who can tell me what a concept is? And I will tell you the answer. A concept is something that which is real. Something that can never be changed. Something that can never be added to or taken away from. It is the essence. It is, you might call it, the ideal. The concept is the ideal. So, what is the concept of Santa Claus? The concept of Santa Claus is a being that lives forever, is always there, giving out gifts to children all over the world, regardless of where they are, whether they're good or bad or right or wrong, it doesn't matter. That's a concept. Now, this concept does what? This concept is universal in all of us. This concept is immortal in all of us. Now, Santa does exist. Santa can come down a chimney. Santa can ride with reindeer in the sky. Santa can go with other types of creatures that they have around the world. Many countries don't know about reindeers, and so they create Santa as coming in creatures that they do know. And it's wonderful. But always in the sky. Always out of the allness. And it is unlimited. No. What is Santa Claus giving to each of you? Actually, nothing. What Santa Claus gives to each of us is one word, awareness. Now, if I tell any of you that you are a princess, or prince, or queen, or king, and you'll say, yeah, sure. Yeah, sure. Of what country? Of what land? Where does Santa Claus belong? What land does he belong to? Every land. Where does Jesus belong? What country? Do you know that the Japanese children have pictures of Jesus that looks just like an ordinary Japanese man? I mean, that's cool. And in Mongolia, they have pictures of Jesus just like an ordinary man, because they too have heard the story of the Bible that has been brought to them by missionaries. But they don't do that. And hey, what did they do in the medieval ages? Jesus wore pants and a shirt and a tie, or whatever he was wearing in those days. You know? What did they try to do to the Sistine Chapel? They tried to put all this modern day clothing from the 15th century, 16th century on the people in the chapel. It didn't work. Didn't work, fortunately. But you see, we always try to equate everything into where we stand and where we are. Now, why do we want to do that? Because we, in our logical minds, want to make things logical. Does a child ever try to make anything logical? Does he ever try to make Santa logical? Or mama? What is a mama to a kid? A mama is somebody who's always there. Papa, he can do anything. Santa Claus, he comes down the chimney. I saw mama kissing Santa Claus. Oh, now, who wrote that song? An adult. Do you think in our disgusting minds, do you think that a child could ever interpret Santa and mama kissing as something bad? Mama is always giving a kiss to somebody for doing something nice. Oh, thank you, Santa, for giving my kids all these lovely gifts. You know, that's what the kids think. But the adult mind wants to put it into something else. That mama's having a relationship with Santa Claus. My goodness sakes. Why do we do things? We're trying to make it illogically illogical, that it certainly couldn't have happened, that this couldn't be. Everybody on earth knows that Santa Claus is daddy. And that is entirely incorrect. I ask you, in the honesty of your minds, if I say to you, what does Santa Claus do at Christmas time? You say, well, he brings presents to children all over the world. Is that your dad? Well, no. My dad could care less about the children of the world. He sometimes doesn't even care about us, you know. You know? Well, is it your mom? No. Is Mrs. Santa Claus your mom? No. Is Santa Claus your dad? No. You don't believe Santa Claus is your dad, you know? Because now you're playing the role of Santa Claus. You know? You don't believe it. And in your mind, I say, let us pray. We put our hands together, we look up to God, you know, outside of ourselves. It's what we've been taught. But we don't believe it. When little children pray, what do? Their parents try to teach them how to do it right. But they kneel by the side of their bed and they bow their head. They say, God, they're looking inside of themselves. They're looking to the divine within themselves. They're looking to their reality. You see? So, you see, they think God is inside of them. They always have. Now, when you pray, where are you going to go to find God? Well, I don't know where heaven is, but I think heaven is in here. You know. They know. They know. And you know. So, Santa does not exist. Santa does exist. It is my choice to dream. How about that? Are you ready to dream? Are you ready to live your life so beautifully, so wonderfully, that you know that Santa has a program for you? This Santa, this symbol, this concept that we don't really know anything about, this symbol that stands for all that's good and beautiful, could Santa ever do anything wrong? Could Santa violate the speed limits? Santa doesn't know what speed limit is. We think of Santa coming from the North Pole to every place in the world, every child's home in the world, in one night. You think he's going the speed limit? He's going zip, and he's there. All the stories that they write trying to immortalize or trying to make real Santa, it takes away his mystique. Let it alone. Now, I will say to you, just to go along with what we were going to be saying soon, don't try to recreate the universe in your image. Rather, create the universe in its unlimited image. Create the universe like Santa. Santa can do anything. He can go anywhere, be anywhere, do anything. Just like you used to create your dad, that he could beat anybody. And that your mom, she is the most loving lady in the world, even though you hated her, because you made your mind. You know, but you loved her. You see, they have become a symbol. They have become an image. Now, as this icon that you're working with, what are you going to do? How are you going to handle this? How are you going to get the most benefit from it? How do little children get the most benefit from Santa Claus? Tell me. They believe. Little children believe in Santa Claus. Little children believe in Santa Claus. Do they get things from Santa Claus?
Yep.
Yeah. Do little children have older children sometimes even give the little children the older children's gift, even though the little children didn't get it? Mm-hmm. Do mama and daddy oftentimes go without things so the children can have things at Christmas time? Yes, many times. You see, this is something that we don't place in the right perspective. What I'm trying to make a case here, that I'm making a case for, I'm making a case for miracles. I'm making a case for magic. You want to believe. You go to see our magician, you know, David Copperfield. And you watch him as he performs his wonderful, mystical, magical worry, and you think to yourself, oh my gosh, my God, how does he do that? You make it happen because you want to believe in him. You want to believe in anything that's magical. you want to believe anything that is not logical for a human standard. And here in our human world, have you ever had time stand still? Mm-hmm. You know what happened when time stood still? You went fast forward yourself. You lived the adventure that you lived in quick motion. And then, of course, it seemed like time had stood still. Do you know that you are doing things on an infinite number of dimensions right here and now, right now in this same room, in the same space that you're in? You're doing hundreds of things. And you're moving quickly and slowly and you're singing and you're talking and you're doing all sorts of things. You see, you are magic. You are magic. Now, what kind of magic do you want from your dream? What kind of magic do you want in your heart? Think about it. What kind of magic would make you feel just 10 feet tall, just so magical? Now, Gertrude looks at me and she says, "Well, Herb, I'd sort of like the magic that my daughter, Katerina, is the happiest girl in the world, that every desire of her heart is fulfilled, and that she lives in bliss and lives in harmony and peace. Is that what you'd like?"
"Yes, I like it, but that's not the first thing I think about."
That's not the first thing you think about. Okay, what's the first thing you think about?
"The first thing is I am always unconditional love."
The first thing you think about is that you are unconditional love. Now, Gertrude, don't you realize that is a stupid thing to wish for? Don't you realize that that is something outrageous, that only happens in fairy tales and picture books? And your answer is, "No, that is who I am." Right?
Yes.
Yes. Didn't take you long to say that, did it? Now, why did Gertrude correct me in saying that what she was putting into motion was Katerina? Because Gertrude wants us to realize first she puts her foundations in motion and then everything follows it. When she puts her foundation in, her kids are perfect, her kids are great, her kids are fantastic, but she is too. And when she puts her foundation in motion, then her ex-husband loves her more deeply today than he ever loved her in the entire universe, you know? And it had nothing to do with sex. Nothing to do with kids. When Gertrude thinks of her former husband, she has a warm, mellow spot in her heart. She feels good. She unconditionally loves him. And that she unconditionally, which is impossible. She cannot unconditionally love him and love him at the same time. Because if she unconditionally loves him, she does not love him because of the warm spot in her heart, because he was her husband, because he was this, because he was that. She loves him because she is pure love. And she knows nothing else other than pure love. Now, let's just go back to my illustration of Gertrude thinking that Katerina is a fulfilled woman. Now, why is it that Katerina is not a fulfilled woman? Why is it that Katerina would like to be a fulfilled woman? Why is it that Katerina would like to have happiness in her life? She'd like to have good relationships. She'd like to have everything going her way. Well, the truth is she does not think those thoughts. The only thought she thinks is, "I am that I am." Now, you see. Well, I know. I remember. You remember what? Yeah. You remember what? You remember when you were in first grade and when you were in second grade and when you were in fifth grade? Are you holding yourself responsible for the little jerk you were when you were in third grade, you know? Because you were trying to be a mean little cuss, trying to get the teacher to give you harder problems so that you'd be challenged? Yeah, sure. You don't remember that. You don't remember that. Does Diego, Ellen's son, does he remember how he was having struggles with mathematics at first? And then along came Ellen, and she says to the teacher, "Hey, you want to talk to me about my genius son?" And the teacher looked at the kid differently, and the kid was a genius. He had been able to successfully hide it from his teacher until his mother woke up and saw it. It was there all the time, but he hid it and he pretended it wasn't. And this is how we are. We pretend that we are not what the subject of our lecture are today. We try to pretend that we are not our original original purity and integrity. We try to pretend that we are not happy. We try to pretend that we are not fulfilled. We try to pretend that we are not unconditional. You can say it.
Love.
We try to pretend that we're not. We try to pretend that we do judge. And that's so silly. Now, Gertrude has a son, Martin, who is just a silly nut. Martin does everything that pleases him. Now, at first, Gertrude thought, hey, he should really learn how to get a job. He should learn how to fit into society. And Gertrude was shoving him into the society mold. And he didn't fit. He kept squirting out here and there every place. And so, finally, Gertrude let him alone and said, go do what you damn please. Be yourself and have fun. And he said, wow! And he took off like a rocket. And he's been having fun and being himself ever since. Now, you see, why did it take Gertrude so long to do that? Because Gertrude herself had been pushed into a mold, and she expected other people to be pushed into a mold. And that's the way you raise your children. Now, if we can raise our children, be yourself and have fun, wow, what wonderful children we'll have. What wonderful children we will have. They always were there, but they have to be revealed. And when they're revealed, you say, my, you were like that all the time, weren't you? Yeah. Yeah. It didn't bother you when I scolded you, did it? No, that's your thing, you know. Did you hear that? That's your thing? That's your thing? Your scolding and your foolishness? See, that's how we do. We play these illogical games. And when we do that, we are so silly. We are so absolutely silly. Now, Santa is a scientist talking about stem cells. Now, we have been talking about stem cells from the beginning of time. Sylvia, what name did they have?
Law of cause and effect.
The law of cause and effect. From the beginning of time. And so now all of a sudden the scientists are coming along. Guess what we found? We found that there's an essence inside of every human being, inside of every cell of every human being. That essence is, it's unlimited quality. It's undifferentiated acted. And it'll do anything. It'll be anything. It'll go anywhere. Hey, cool, huh? Now, the law of cause and effect says, for whatever cause you put in motion, you get an effect. Well, now, these stem cells that are in the brain are being born, 10,000 in the brain every day, probably more than that. And how many cells are in the brain approximately?
Some
trillions. 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 And 10,000 is what science counted. They don't have a good counting mechanism. But we know that every cell in the body, every cell anywhere in the universe is a stem cell. And it gravitates to another stem cell, another cell, which has taken on a way of doing something. And so you go to visit this other stem cell, this other cell, and the other cell says, I'm getting old, I'm going to die, I'm doing these things. And the stem cell comes in and says, do we have to do that? Well, if you're going to be with me, you have to do that. If you're going to live in my world, you have to do that, you see. So what do you do? What do you do? I never touched it, I'm sure it's still on. What do you do? You don't associate with any old stem cells. You associate with yourself. Are you happy enough with yourself to live with yourself, to be by yourself, and associate just with yourself? If you can, then you get the benefit that comes from that. Now, the benefit from just being yourself, associating with yourself, and living who you are, is that whatever you choose to be, that's what you'll be. Now, you say, okay, I want a remodeling job done on my liver. And so the stem cell says, I want that job. And he goes down, he jumps into the liver, and he is his original purity and integrity, and pretty soon, the liver just transforms into the pure being that it is, no matter how what condition it is, no matter how bad it is. It doesn't matter. I told you about Irene, you all shriveled up with cancer. And she changed her mind. She put a new cause in motion. She told her stem cells, I want wholeness. And she was. In just a short time. It didn't even need to be that short time. But the thing is, can you imagine what her doctor would have said when she said, I want you to tell my family I'm whole and perfect and that this is a misdiagnosis. What do you think would happen to her doctor if the minute she said that, she was whole and perfect, he'd look at her and say, you are whole and perfect. You do. Oh, he'd blow his mind. And he would not be an effective doctor for anybody else after that, which may be not too bad. But anyhow, you see, she had within her, at that moment, always, her perfection. She could have lived that perfection at that moment or any moment, but she chose to work it out over a period of time so she wouldn't seem too wonderful and too strange. When Jesus spoke to the people who were lying, sleeping, and he said, arise. He didn't say, now look, you've been dead now for a week, you've been dead for a while, and you got a little bit of rejuvenation to do in your body. Your cells have to come back together, your operational things have to, your brain has been out of business for a while, you got to get that back in order again, you got to do all these things. Remember, he could say all those things, couldn't he? He could say all those things, but did he? What did he say? Pick up your bed and walk. Arise. Go. That's what he said. He didn't say, now, take it easy. You've just been dead for a while, you know, and your body hasn't been operating, and you might not remember how to walk. Come on, hop out of that bed. Get back going, just like you should. You see, no waiting time, no expectation, because he saw it as already done. And, of course, the people that he talked with and was working with, they too saw it already done. And so they could do it. Now, what if we lived in a dual universe, or a triple universe, or a quadruple universe, or a quintuple universe, or whatever? What if we lived in a multiple universe? And what if you had the experience, and then Jesus came along and said, arise. And what if you said, go stick it up your nose, I'm dead, you know? People do that. People tell the doctors, no way. But what if you said that? You see, you'd be on two universes there. This universe here, you would be perfect. This universe here, you'd be having your troubles. Now, when you merge the two, then every universe has you perfect. But as long as you're going to fight it, as long as you're going to fight the principle, the law of cause and effect, it's going to work as a fight for you. It's going to work contrary to whatever you really want for yourself. That's just the way it goes. Now, what are you going to do about it? How are you going to begin to accept the gift from Santa of these stem cells throughout our body, throughout our world? Science fiction writers write science fiction about things that have never happened, because they are things that are happening on another dimension, and these people have privy to that. They are able to know about it. Now, you say, wow, you know, why can't I do things like that? You can. When the writer of Harry Potter wrote the first story, she was writing about something that's in her heart. The reason her story is so accepted, and little by little now it's getting less accepted because she's forgetting her first directive on writing the story. She wrote the story about real live people. In her first couple of books, every one of her people were real people. You could feel about them. Now, in volume 5 and 6 and 7, she's writing about real people, but she has forgotten the intimacy of their love. She has forgotten the caringness of their being. She has forgotten the little idiosyncrasies that make them individuals. She's forgotten that. And she makes them fall into traps. In this last one that we saw about Harry Potter, she had Harry Potter be frightened of his own shadow. Harry Potter was never frightened of his own shadow. He might have been afraid, but he didn't show it. He tried to keep it. But she had him, as a human being, losing his temper after coming through all those years of mastership school, wizard school. She had him being human, being interested in girls. That part's okay, but she had him being so interested that he lost his values. He lost his control of his of himself. She had him walking through a classroom teaching these people like a superior being. He is humility. He is humbleness. He is gentleness. He is sincerity. He is all these things. That's the Harry Potter I knew. That's the Harry Potter I knew and learned to love. But now, oh, you say he's becoming a young man. No. Do you lose your humility because you grow up? Do you lose your integrity because you grow up? You see, this is what they want us to believe, that as we grow older, we forget what we learned as a child. Men, you do forget what you learned as a child if you want to forget what you learned as a child. No. This is what they say about people who are older, who are becoming senile. They're in their second childhood. What does it mean when a person's in his second childhood? It merely means that he has put away the human limitations and gone back to the realm of unlimitedness. It's really quite exciting. Very exciting. You are at that stage now. You're at that stage of reaching out and going forth in a very beautiful, positive, dynamic way of accomplishing anything you want. But if you're going to believe the scientists telling you about stem cells, that's okay. If you're going to believe Santa telling you that if you're good, you'll have everything you want. Why is it the children ask for little things from Santa Claus? That's what they wanted. They didn't want something that an adult would want, because they don't think in adult terms. They didn't want a Rolls Royce. You know, they didn't want a Caddy. Oh, they'd like to have a motorbike, you know. But they know they can't. They know they can't have it because they're not allowed to ride it yet. So, in the realm of where they believe they are, they create everything coming to them. And it does. This is why we have to be so careful. We get troubled with logic, with reason, with principle. And principle's okay, but what does the principle say to us? Can we rewrite the laws? Can we rewrite the rules?
Yes.
You can't float because you're too heavy. You can't float because you can't float because you're too light. You can't float because you're anchored. What did Peter Pan do when he wanted to take Captain Hook's boat? He says, up anchor. And they rolled the anchor up. And then he took Tinkerbell. He said, Tinkerbell, we need a little tinker spot. And so he shook her over the boat. And the boat turned into beautiful gold. And the boat floated into the sky. And Peter didn't have to steer it. He didn't have to do anything. Just be the captain, which he loved. Now, how did the boat get to where they were going? Peter told it. How did they accomplish the things they wanted to accomplish? Peter told them to. You see, he believed in himself. And what was the theme of the song or the story? Or the theme of the story? I don't want to grow up. Now, I would like each one of us to have that same attitude of mind. I don't want to grow up. Not necessarily, I don't want to grow up. I am eternally young. I am vital, dynamic, alive. I am ageless, timeless. I live in the here and the now. Now, as we say that to ourselves, what's going to happen? We'll live in the here and the now. As we enter into that, what did you like about King Arthur? What did you like about Camelot? It never rains in the day in Camelot, only at night. And the winter only lasts so long in Camelot. The king has decreed this. And the king was the one who pulled the sword out of the stone, Excalibur. See, the king did all of these things. It was so fantastic. Impossible! Merlin must have really put a lot of fanciful ideas in that kid's mind, right?
Real ideas.
He put the truth in there, didn't he? Or anything he would have put there would have been the truth. Anything. Yeah. Now, where did Arthur make his mistake? Arthur made his mistake by not staying with principle. He made man-made laws and tried to hold the world up to man-made laws, whereas he knew the unlimited law of spiritual life was far better and greater. We do that too. I say to Ellen, now, what is the logic, what is the honest thing for us to do? Should we honestly pay this fee, or shall we honestly do this, or shall we, you know, register the cars this way or that way, or have the insurance done this way or that way? And what am I doing? There's only one way to do it, the right way, and that's the way we do it. That may not be the way that society does it, but that's the way we do it. Theoretically, we would say our car is surrounded by the pure white light of love, and nobody sees it. It's invisible. Nobody knows anything about it except us. And we have it for our use. And we go to town, nobody sees us. We go to the grocery store, nobody sees us. We may buy the groceries, we may do whatever we feel. Or, what is the infinite cosmos? Can anyone tell me? The infinite cosmos is the allness, right? Okay. Ellen wants a, let's just say a Mercedes 450 SL, for want of better words. Okay, Ellen wants a 450 SL. What color?
Red.
Red. And what color is the interior?
Beige.
White. 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 Ooh. And is it leather or cloth?
Leather.
Leather. Okay. Now, I can ask you, and we make that thing into a great car. Ellen, I will give it to you right now. Boom, there it is. And you say, well, Herb, I can't accept it. And I say, well, why can't you accept it? Well, because it has a number on it, and in the factory, it'll be reported as stolen. You know, it's, you stole it. You didn't build it yourself. No. Ellen, go on the hood in the windshield and look and see where the serial number is that is always there. Now, what do you see?
I see the number.
You see nothing. It has no number. It has no number. It never was in the factory. It never was on the production line. It was in your mind. You created out your... You don't need a number for your mind.
Okay.
You might just have the word Ellen Jeremini across there. You know, but you don't need anything. Now, can you think in that realm?
Oh, yeah.
Who insures your car?
The pure white light of love.
Are you sure that's what you want to say? Who insures your car? Anybody else?
My consciousness.
Now, what did she just... Yes? Well, we're asking who insures it. The universe has no insurance, and Sylvia says, my consciousness. All right, now, Anita, who insures the car?
I do.
And who insures it? Christina? If you heard anything you believe, you can say it, or say what you believe.
I do.
And who insures the car?
I do.
And who insures the car?
My consciousness.
My consciousness. Who insures the car, Ellen?
My thought, my consciousness.
Now, why are you for what are you insuring the car? That it exists in happiness?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right.
If you wrap, sincerely, anything, starting with yourself, in your pure white light of love, what could ever happen to it? Yeah?
Joy and happiness, eternal life.
Now, isn't that something, Ellen? Had you thought about that? Had you thought about that, Ellen? Had you thought about having your car have eternal life? Interesting, huh? Yeah. Eternal life. It never is destroyed.
That's true.
Isn't that exciting? What's that?
I like a new one from time.
Ellen, you have the perfect right to give away anything you have.
That's true.
Now, yeah, you may give me that blessed car if you like, but but you can give it to anybody you want.
Sure.
Now, you don't tell your son to wrap his car in a pure white light of love, or maybe you do, but you can give him a car that's already wrapped. And you say, Diego, I love you, and I would like to see you driving this beautiful car I've been enjoying for a while. What color do you like, Diego? Oh, I like blue. Okay, it's blue. And so it's blue. And Mom, what do you want me to do? Come over there and pick it up or what? No. Diego, go out in front of your house that's sitting there right now. Right?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Now, Diego... I see you living in your unconditionally loving being, yes, and I see you as having the ability to think any thought and have it be revealed to you right now. Could you say that?
Sure.
You couldn't say that because you can't say it for yourself.
Well,
that's right. First you say it for yourself. And this is what this week is all about. Learning to say it for ourselves. And learning that we have all the power in the universe to say it. And we can say it and do it and enjoy it if we want to. Santa is a scientist talking about stem cells. Well, Santa is this impractical, improbable being that just does not exist, cannot ever be, but which does exist, which is us, which is our
consciousness.
Our consciousness. Santa Claus is our consciousness. Santa Claus is our consciousness. God is our consciousness. Jesus is our consciousness. All these things are our consciousness, and they are fantastic. Well, we have shared today, lesson one, what Santa has in store for me. And can you imagine what he has in store for you? So, we will come back at whatever time it is, 2:30, and we will have lecture two, I Am a Winner. So, join me at 2:30 for finding out why I am so fabulous, so wonderful, and such a great winner. I love you. I love you. I love you.